Welcome to the Locked Up Living 25 Minute Cut with Naomi Murphy and David Jones talking to Gareth Ross and Lucy Redding on their new paper, Social Climate Across Therapeutically Distinct Prison Wings.
Because rehab culture is becoming more of a hot topic, I guess, in prisons at the moment. We had a rehab culture committee start up at Gartree, and we just felt it was really important to have a good understanding of what is the culture or the climate like right now before we can really make any massive changes or begin any projects. We wanted to know what our baseline was. So we felt that it'd be really important to do this project as part of a starting of rehab culture committee and really building upon that from the outcome of the research.
I think for me as well, like working in different parts of the same prison, I was really aware that it felt like they're very different. The atmosphere could feel really different from, you know, one wing to another in ways I could describe. Though sometimes it was intangible, but I was really interested to see if it was possible to kind of measure that in a way that might be, I suppose, more scientific or more observable than just a kind of clinical experience. And so the essences measure that we used in the study was kind of a chance to do that, really. So that was part of the interest, I think, in the area.
Tell us a bit about your prison.
So it's a Category B prison within the long-term high security estate, and we hold about 700 residents who are all serving a life sentence of some kind, whether it's mandatory, discretionary or an indeterminate sentence for public protection. It's a pretty static population. And as Gareth just sort of started to allude to there, we've got quite different units at this prison. So we've got three units that are part of the OPD pathway, so the Offender Personality Disorder pathway. We have a TC, a TC plus, and we have a pipe, and that's a progression pipe. So for people who have already completed their core interventions, if you like. And then we have our mainstream units as well. So we've got eight other wings at this prison. So there's about 600 people on the mainstream part of the prison, and then 100 split between the TC plus, the TC and the pipe. So we felt, again, just that the previous research only really looked at whole prisons that were rehabilitative or therapeutic, if you like, versus whole prisons that maybe didn't have as much of that. So what was quite unique about this project was that we were looking at the therapeutic wings and the mainstream wings within one site, and the real different experiences that people can have going between those wings. So that was another kind of USP, if you like, of the research.
One of the things I really enjoyed about your paper is there's a really lovely observation at the start about some of the really small nuances of prison life that remind everyone of the power differences that rarely get spoken of outside. So I was thinking, you talk about, you make observations about the language that's used and very small humiliations, such as having to ask for a toilet roll, for instance.
Yeah, thank you. I think, like, for me, really, what is at the heart of a lot of that is a sort of sense of disempowerment and, you know, really sort of infantilizing almost the population, keeping them under sort of subjugation. And that really speaks to a kind of giving people a lack of autonomy or control over their, you know, their day-to-day living, the decisions that they make. And, you know, that sense of autonomy is obviously really important for a person's resilience. And taking that away, you know, has negative implications. And I think one of the, I guess we might come to this, but maybe one of the differences between sort of mainstream locations and the more sort of enabling environments are that, where as much as possible in those environments, the service users are given the opportunity to have as much autonomy as possible within the sort of wider prison rules, if you like. It kind of, I think it serves to keep people placed in the kind of, if you like, offender narrative, which is, you know, contrary to the aims of the service ultimately. And so I think they're the, to me, to my mind, they're two of the most striking kind of impacts, if you like, of that sort of day-to-day disempowerment.
Mm. Yes, thank you. And I suppose what that led to for me was a kind of reflection on the language, and knowing myself, having, you know, worked in prisons for a long time, that over time staff often start using language that is very natural for the prison, like talking about feeding and shipping people out, you know, which is language which is really, you know, conjures up the image of cattle rather than human beings. I suppose it's really striking that you both work in a prison and have worked there for a long time, but you still notice these things, whereas lots of prison staff, I think, kind of naturalise to the prison setting. So I was wondering how you managed to hold on to that sense of what's not normal.
I think some things have always felt not normal, even from, you know, just joining the service. It always felt unusual to me to be calling people by their surnames. I still regularly get called Miss on the wings. I always find that odd, you know, I'm not a teacher, I have a name. And I think, you know, the background that you have from a, you know, working in psychology or doing a psychology degree, you carry with that, you know, empathy and compassion and wanting to learn more about people and seeing people as human beings. I think it is easy to get carried away and to fit in, I guess, with some of that prison language, and you do get desensitized to the environment for sure, you know, with the keys and what you can and can't take in. It is an abnormal environment to work in, let alone to live in. But I think what helps you to keep things not normal in mind is your supervision, discussions with your colleagues and your peers, and just keeping on top of, you know, the literature and being curious to learn more and read more all the time, and understanding why seeing people in prison as offenders versus seeing them as people is, you know, it's just key in terms of trying to understand how to help people change and improve, and why not doing those things has a negative impact.
I think some roles might lend themselves more to some of the processes, like where we might dehumanize clients. Some of our, within psychology, say, some of our processes are very regimented, very manualized. Our risk assessments are often, quite structured, and based around ultimately sort of groups and group norms and sort of research literature. And while we might spend time getting to know an individual to help us with a formulation, it's, you know, with a relatively tight time scale, and it's very different from being in an environment where you might get to know someone over a period of several years.
One of the things that you talk about within your paper is the difference between culture and climate. And I wondered, and what impact these have on resilience. I wondered, do you think one's more implicated than the other?
I think they're both very important, obviously. I think to distinguish between the two, that what we use in the paper is this, the idea that climate is perhaps more subjective, more malleable, whereas, you know, culture is more stable and entrenched, and you wouldn't expect a climate to change drastically from one moment to the next or one day to the next. You expect some stability, but also it might be more possible to change and to be more distinct between one place and another within the same organization, as we found in this study. And I think that in reality they will both influence one another. I think the culture is perhaps, you know, sets the parameters of what might be achievable, and, you know, The climate within that can change, but the influence can be two ways. And similarly, the wider, if the culture of an organisation is what we're talking about, then the culture of the system above that will also sort of influence things, and the culture of the country as a whole, you know. And going down more narrowly within the climate, there would be subgroups and individuals that actually can influence things kind of going upwards as well. So I think it's kind of a multi-systemic thing, ultimately.
Okay. We wanted to talk a bit about your research findings now. Can you say a bit about your overall findings?
Yeah, sure. So the first key research question was looking at whether or not the perceived social climate on the therapeutic wings differs compared to the social climate on the mainstream wings. And what we found was across the board, for the essences, is made up of three subscales. So for each of the subscales, the therapeutic wings rated the social climate far more positively than the mainstream wings, which fitted in with our hypotheses that that would be the case. What we also did, the second question, was to look at whether or not the staff and the residents differed in terms of their perceptions of social climate. And we pulled all staff and all residents for this analysis. What we found was that staff perceptions of the social climate overall were more positive than the residents. But what was interesting was that when you broke that down further into the subscales, so one of the scales looks at the sort of cohesion between residents. So we called that peer support. So there were no real differences in how staff or residents saw peer support. But when we got to safety, so how safe people in the prison feel, the residents rated themselves feeling slightly more safe than the staff. But I guess the key thing to compare that against was the essence's norms. And overall, it was found that mainly everybody felt, I think it was clearly below average in terms of levels of safety. So if everybody's feeling clearly below average, it was just that residents felt slightly safer within that category. And then finally, we looked at staff prisoner or staff resident relationships, and staff rated themselves as supportive. Residents disagreed with that. So there was a disconnect there with those ratings, which would have been really good to unpick a little bit more, you know, through qualitative research. But we didn't do that as part of the research study. And then we did a supplementary analysis that literally tracked each wing. And so we pulled everybody, all staff, all residents for each wing, and did a comparison of how the social climate felt. And again, I think if I'd have plotted it before, it probably would have come out fairly in line with the results. And again, we just saw that the mainstream wings were pretty low in terms of their social climate. We had a real dip when we went into the segregation unit, and then it really peaked when you got to the rehabilitation wings or the therapeutic wings. So kind of fitted in line with our hypotheses.
Right, that's very interesting, isn't it? So one of the first points that you made there was that both residents and staff felt below average in terms of safety. So that's in relation to other prisons or other forensic units, is it?
That was other UK Cat B prisons.
Right. But if you just took the norms, it's perhaps making some kind of comment about the prison overall.
It is, yeah. Perhaps. Yeah.
Because one of your findings was that prisoners felt less supported by staff than staff felt that they were supportive. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Something that I wrote about in the paper was the items on the essences were quite interesting. And I think if I'd have gone down to an item level analysis, it might have pulled out some other interesting differences, because some of the items on the subscale spoke about, you know, I give time to the resident. But then another item said something like, I know that staff know the residents' histories well. So both of those items are in the same scale. So I think staff could probably confidently say that they do give the residents a lot of time, and that, you know, they deal with day-to-day issues, day-to-day problems. But I think when you're going maybe a little bit deeper in terms of, do they really know the residents? And I think on the mainstream wings, there just isn't that time necessarily to get to know as many people as you'd like to know.
Do you think you notice any difference between the therapeutic communities and the pipe?
There was no statistical significant difference between the TCs and the pipe. The pipe did come out highest when you really picked apart the data, which may well be because it's a progression pipe at this prison, so people have done all of their core treatment. Whereas obviously on the TC and the TC Plus, they're in the middle of some really intense work. And so there might be some level of difference, I guess, in how safe they feel or how supported they feel by each other or by staff. Whereas perhaps when you come onto the pipe, when you finished everything, things feel a bit better and you're feeling a bit more positive that you're moving forwards. But there was no statistical difference between them. They all were rated good.
Hmm. So, well, that's very interesting, isn't it? Because it kind of suggests that, at least in terms of these items, it's to do with the relationship, the relational aspect, rather than the therapeutic practice, which makes a difference.
Yeah, and I think that was sort of the big conclusion that we drew from the research, was that the TC, the TC Plus, and the PIPE are all underpinned by core principles, you know, whether that's the EE standards specifically or not, but there's, you know, relational workings at the heart of all of those units, and just makes such a massive difference when you physically go onto the unit versus going onto one of the mainstream wings. Like Gareth was saying earlier, you can really feel the difference. And, you know, the staff working on each of those units have enhanced training, their access to support and supervision and training is far greater than what it is for the staff on the mainstream wings.
Slightly straying, did you get any opportunity to look at the segregation unit? It's probably not called that, of course, but and the relationships there and how they compared to other parts of the prison?
Yeah, we did look at the segregation unit, and the social climate came out the worst from compared to all of the wings. We didn't get loads of responses, more responses from staff than we did from the people that were in the segregation unit at that point. I think possibly only one or two people from potentially 10 to 12 cells, I think we have down there. So yeah, it was difficult to reach those people to really take part and get them involved in that. The interesting thing that we did get from the analysis was that of the three subscales on the essences, so safety was low, peer support was low, you know, they're not interacting with anybody, but staff support was rated the highest out of the three scales. Now that was mainly completed by staff, so potentially it's not, you know, the most accurate view. But again, in terms of the ratings given on there, you know, they do spend a lot of time talking to the guys that are down there, and a lot of effort does go in. So it would have been interesting to have a few more responses from the residents that were down there at the time. And I think that's something for future research. We can think more about how we would engage with those people.
Your paper begins by saying that rehabilitation is one of the key priorities of the prison service. And you draw attention to the prison service's ethos of safety, decency, hope and optimism. So do you think these are all important characteristics for resilience and the building of relationships?
Yes, I think it goes without saying that those are all essential in terms of building resilience. And I think people need to have that sense of safety before, you know, they can grow. And I think a lot of people talk about life in prison is about survival and it treading water and getting by. And I think when you're in that survival mode, there is no real room for growth and for thriving. You know, a lot of definitions of resilience are about thriving. And I think when you haven't got that sense of safety, there's just very little chance to try and really thrive and change and do things differently for yourself.
Do you think the culture needs changing as a whole, or can it be changed by the influence of discrete units like the ones you looked at?
Well, I mean, so there's a few things there, I guess. I think there can be a conflict between a wider culture and efforts to instill rehabilitative ideals, trauma-informed practice, you know, relational working, those kinds of things. Nevertheless, I think they are really, you know, crucial kind of mission statements, if you like, and I think really important for the service to keep in mind, even if, you know, it can seem maybe ambitious, maybe even overly ambitious sometimes when you're faced with some of the brutal realities of prison life. But I think it's really important to hold on to those goals, because if you don't, then what are you left with? I mean, there's a danger of just succumbing to a kind of hopelessness and a kind of pessimistic institutional narrative that will just lead to far worse outcomes than a perhaps not quite realized ideal. So, however, you know, you really do need the organizational support to help those pockets thrive. Otherwise, they could become, you know, more isolated, countercultural, be seen as maybe even subversive, and the influence that they can have on the wider organization or establishment will be lost. So I think you need to have those pockets, because people need to see that working. People need to see how that can be effective.
Well, one of the interesting suggestions that you made earlier was that that you make in your paper, actually, where you're talking about safety, is the idea that actually feeling less safe might be functional for staff. And I wondered if you could say a little bit more about that.
I guess just to repeat the finding, it was that most people felt unsafe or clearly below average, the rating was, but the residents felt slightly safer than the members of staff. So that was something that was found in other research as well that's been conducted using the essences, both in the UK and abroad, that typically residents do feel slightly safer than staff. And I think staff feeling less safe is probably reflective of, you know, the levels of violence have increased in this prison and in prisons generally. And the function of prison is really different for staff and residents. And for staff, you know, we get to go home at the end of the day, and for residents, particularly serving long sentences at this prison, you know, you have to adapt and you have to be able to survive. And I think staff don't have that same need that needs filling for that survival. So I think certainly the residents, you know, develop ways to achieve that, where staff probably don't. But also, I sort of hypothesised in the paper as to whether if staff feel less safe, does that sort of counter against any complacency? And almost keeping, if staff feel a little bit on the back foot, if you like, will they work harder to sort of strive to maintain levels of safety and security? But I guess the flip side of that is that the therapeutic wings, you know, reported feeling safe and they're not complacent. And what's interesting with those wings is that, again, that relational working and the dynamic security is probably what contributes to making those wings feel safer. So it's a really difficult finding to really explain and get to the bottom of, because you can sort of see how it could be functional to be on the back foot and to be working hard to like try and keep up with them, if you like, keep up with the residents, but that's just not seen on the other wings.
Great. Well, thanks very much indeed, Lucy Redding and Gareth Ross. Been great speaking with you.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.